Alan Seinfeld and myself, the Mob, as we co-host the 9th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration, Thursday, April 23rd, from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. A conscious community gathering with 7 world leaders having a panel discussion. There will be indigenous ceremonies, live performances, and community participation. That's Thursday, April 23rd from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church, 81 Christopher Street near 7th Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. with a 6:30 pre-show. For tickets and info, go to www.planetheart.org. That's www.planetheart.org. Or email info@planetheart.org. Come on down.
Thanks for listening to that. This is Alan Steinfeld, and that's a little announcement for the upcoming Earth Day celebration. This is the 9th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration in New York City. That is Thursday, April 23rd, 2015, starting at 6:30, going to 10:30 at the St. John's Lutheran Church. That's 81 Christopher Street in the West Village of Manhattan. There'll be performers, speakers, lectures, and a panel discussion, and we'll be getting into the gist of that in just a moment. But you can get tickets for this at planetheart.org. And I recommend it because it's always a lot of fun, these gatherings. And it's been going on for 9 years. I'm hosting it with Christy Marie, who you just heard on that public service announcement. So tonight's program is really dedicated to Earth Day, and my guest tonight is someone who's, I think, in a way, dedicated herself to the Earth. It's grandmother Barbara Three Crow, and she's part of a Native American tradition. She lives up in upstate New York, but she's very connected to indigenous wisdom and supporting indigenous wisdom around the planet. And so welcome to the program, Barbara.
Thank you, Alan. It's really nice to be here and nice to talk with you.
Yes, Barbara will be one of the keynote speakers and panelists that night on Thursday, the 23rd. You know, it's kind of, in a way, I think, silly to talk about Earth Day, because if you're a person of an indigenous background, in every day is Earth Day, wouldn't you say?
Well, I was going to say that. But, you know, sometimes we have to do these things, I guess. It's sort of like, I don't think people in general go around thinking every day of, this is, you know, Earth Day, or let me think of the Earth, you know. But so we have to have these types of events, I guess, to bring people together and talk about why we are coming together and why it is important to consciously think of and celebrate, first of all, the peace that we're talking about. And Earth Day, of course, is very significant. The Earth herself is very significant. Yes.
Well, yeah, it's significant because, of course, it's what we got. So I was just thinking, you know, if you're – and you're from a Native American background, a part of that. They never forgot their connection, like the Kogi in South America, or I was just with the Aborigines in Australia. They are so connected to the Earth. Can you talk about that? What is our natural calling to be so connected to the Earth? What is it like? Well, you live that way yourself.
Well, it's a very important part of my life, for sure. And, you know, I feel that everyone, no matter what your heritage is, where you came from, what your people were, or your ancestors, specifically, well, we're here on Turtle Island. You know, we talk about this part of the world as Turtle Island. And so Manhattan is the beginning of Turtle Island, this whole continent. And but I feel that the people in Europe, you know, because a lot of people, of course, their ancestors came from Europe to mm-hmm. Turtle Island. But originally, all people, no matter what color you are, your roots are based on what I call the earth ways or tribal a tribal connectedness. This is before, of course, technology and before major religions started to take over. People were very close to the earth. They were tribal all throughout Europe. If you really do your homework, you could find that out. You know, I'm part Celt, you know, the Irish, English, and Scot, and I'm Nanticoke, Delaware, Lenape, and adopted Lakota. And I know my people in Europe, the Celts, and even the Scots, were very tribal. But all people have this fundamental nature. And I mean by that the nature of ourself is really connected to our home, our place. And, of course, that's the Mother Earth. And this is our great ship in the universe. And we're all, you know, here, and we're all involved in where are we going to take this ship and keeping her afloat. So I feel it's inside of everyone, this connectedness. But I think it's – I just want to go a little further here. Yes. I think it's been dumbed out of us, consumered out of us. And we've lost that very essential piece, a very key piece, you know. That's all. That's what I wanted to add.
No, I think it's important to add that because, yeah, we have lost it. And, you know, did we have to lose it? I mean, we have now the means to live and be connected, but I don't know. Would we have gotten as far technologically if we just stayed close to the earth? I mean, is it really even that important, that this technological evolution? Mm. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we're all asking that question, I think, at this point in time. You know, technology is really bringing us closer together. I mean, we can speak to people all over the world. We know, you know, we're really connected that way. And actually, the First Nations people, many of the people had prophecies speaking about what they called the web. There would be a web throughout the whole of the world. I mean, there is a sacred web. Aside from that, I believe that they were seeing this web of connectedness. So we do have that. And, you know, Creator, I say Creator, Mother, Father. I don't like to give a gender here because I think that we're caught up too much in the, you know, the man with the beard and the white robe sitting on a cloud, you know. And I work very hard to include the sacred feminine, sacred masculine in this omniscient Creator, Mother, Father. And gave everything to us that we really needed. Everything is here. The medicines are here. The plant medicines are here. The water was here. You know, the forest, the green, everything we needed, food, was all that we needed. We didn't really need technology, but we're with it now. And there's a reason for it, for sure. But what are we doing with it? That's the question. You know,
well, I mean, maybe it could bring us all together as a planetary consciousness in a way that hasn't existed before. I mean, I think it can be used to bring peace and harmony and abundance and freedom. I mean, that's my hope, that of technology. You know, if since it is here, we might as well make the most of it, right?
Well, let's say make the best of it, because when you have a power, power can be used for good or bad, you know, and the technology is bringing us into territories that I feel is tipping things out of balance. I think we've lost the balance, and we've been given this ability, this technology, for sure. I believe that everything happens for a reason. We've been given it, and it's up to us to use it respectfully and consciously. And some of the technology, I think, has been destructive. I think the web, like we're speaking now, and I'm on a few other talk shows, and we speak to connect with everyone throughout the whole of the world. So we're able to do that, and we're able to share information that is crucial and helpful and uplifting and important for all people. And that's what's bringing us together. You know, we're speaking to each other. We're not saying, well, we can't talk to you because you're of a different color or you're of a different religion. The you know, it's out in the atmosphere, our communications, and what we talk about and how we share is very, very important. You know, just like the world peace celebration that we're going to be taking part in.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I agree with all of what you said. So how do we start to live differently? How do we start to live more harmoniously, in touch indigenously with the land, with the earth? What do you suggest?
Well, you know, I do want to mention that we are in the time of several prophecies unfolding. One of them is the rainbow prophecy, or the rainbow warrior prophecy, which means, of course, rainbow is many colors. And the rainbow warrior prophecy means all people, all nations, black, red, yellow, white, and now brown, coming together and standing up for the earth, for our children and our grandchildren, because it's quite obvious that we've reached a tipping point. We can see another prophecy unfolding, which is the prophecy of chaos, the prophecy of insanity increasing, the prophecy of violence increasing. And I call this the breakup and shattering prophecy. One part of that is that everything that was put in place for hundreds of years by the dominator patriarchy rule, okay, all systems that we are ruled by or function with were put in place by that patriarchy dominator rule, excluding the sacred feminine. And this is the next prophecy that we are right now moving into, is the return of the sacred feminine, which means returning to balance and harmony. This is crucial because we know the history of what happened to the sacred feminine, and this means balance. Masculine, feminine, sacred masculine. It's not just about women, it's about men and women, the masculine and feminine. So we're really right now in a mix of various prophecies unfolding. And one of the things that is missing, that, for instance, technology has moved us away from, is that fundamental nature of our relationship to nature, to creation, which gives us a sense of well-being and peace, and it is a healing mechanism. When you go out into nature, it's renewing, it's peaceful. People receive healing. You know, it's a place of meditation or quietness or stillness. It's away from the technology that allows you to go to your heart, okay, to shut off the monkey mind, for instance, or to shut off the worry and the stresses that we are so inundated with now. And I think we have to find a balance, Alan, where we really are out of balance. So this is something I'm really very strongly speak about.
So this return of the divine feminine is also a way of reconnecting to the earth, because the earth is the great mother in that way. Is that what you're saying?
I am, exactly. It's connected. You know, the earth is the mother. We call her the mother, or the great sacred mother. And throughout history, all cultures, I would say the greater majority of cultures, were connected to this understanding that the earth is the great sacred mother. Then you had the offshoots of different spiritual groups. You had the goddess cultures that were deliberately destroyed. You had the Druids. You had various other cultures that really were very connected and in relationship with the elemental world, which of course includes the earth herself. But the elements, meaning when you're living close to the earth, you are in relationship. You can't help but be in relationship. And it's the technology that removes us from that connectedness.
even though the technology itself is really made from the earth as well, you know, it's kind of
yes,
it's in a way ironic because everything comes from the earth. But yeah, so what I hear you saying is that in a sense there's a different way of thinking. You go into nature and your thoughts change. There's a shift in the mindset. And that's what, and I find that connectedness in the indigenous people I've lived with and studied with and met, you know, and there's a relationship among their similar attitudes to the earth. I mean, I just was for 2 weeks with an Australian Aborigine family in the south part of Australia, and it was a whole different way of being. It was like a relationship with the earth, like someone would have a relationship with a person. There was a constant awareness of this relationship, at least among the people I was with, to this great being. So it's like, it was actually a two-way relationship. You do this, she does this. You know, is that unusual? Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it does. And understanding what that relationship does for us is really key. You know, when you separate yourself from that source, the source of life, because she's the life giver, you know, she feeds us, she gives us the water, she's got the medicines. I mean, everything about the earth is the life giver, the nurturer. And when, of course, we get our food from, like, you know, we get our food from the earth, we get our water from the earth, everything, like you said, even the technology consists of particles or part of the earth. But if you're separate from the source of anything, for instance, if you're separate from, you know, what is necessary for you, for your well-being, for your harmony and balance, you begin to suffer on many levels. And First Nations people understood the what we call the Creator's Law, or the Law of One, meaning that we are one with. There's the word in Lakota, which many people may have heard. It's Metakuio Yasin, which means we are all related. It doesn't just mean as people, because we are all related as people. But it means we're related with everything. And how does that relationship happen? Well, it's either conscious or unconscious, but it is still present, meaning we are energetic beings, okay? We are sensitive and energetic, as is all of creation. The living earth, the energy of the trees, the energy of the waters, the essences, the living vibration, the energy. We also are that way. We are energetic beings. We sense things. We send energy. We feel things. We feel each other. We feel certain things going on, not only emotional, but just our sensory awareness of where we are. It's automatic. It's present. But it's more profound when you are consciously aware of your relationship to everything. And this is the way that the First Nations understood. And yes, it is a relationship on the level of respect, appreciation, gratitude, and you're absolutely right that, well, if I do this way, this will occur then in return. I will receive this in return. That's that balance. That's that understanding of relationship.
You know, we should really be taught this type of way of being from when we're a child. I mean, this is how we're supposed to live with that kind of respect that you're talking about.
Well, you know, when you have that respect, of course, yes, if you're taught that, it helps you in your life to be not only respectful of your environment, but to be grateful. And when you have that, then you are that way toward other people as well. You know, you come to understand that we are all related. You know, we're not separate. We are all connected. we call, you know, we are the children of the earth, and we're all sacred. It doesn't matter what your beliefs are, what your, you know, your religion or your color is. We are all children of this earth, and we have been taught that we are separate in that way. And we are individuals, but we are all related, you know.
Right. So. No, I totally agree, of course, and we're related to the earth because these are we're actually walking around inside the earth. Our bodies are our earth bodies. These are direct manifestations of the earth's energetic physical field. But, you know, we have this understanding, but you know, corporations, you know, these businesses, these companies are destroying the earth. And of course, we, and I'll bring this up in our discussion, we're participants in this destruction. I mean, anytime you drive a car, anytime you, throw plastic bag away, just simple things like that, we are participating in the disconnection and the destruction of this very thing that is giving us, you know, the life force. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, this is a very big discussion. We are all a part of this on various levels, some more severe than others. Some are really completely unconscious and just, you know, out, just bent on taking.
Yeah, and destroying the earth, and, you know, it's...
Yes, and it's basically what I call greed. I call greed an evil energy. It is evil. It colors people's perception of things. They don't really connect. They're so far removed from the idea that there is a forest that has an energy, that it has a living aspect to it, and that there is a sensory connectedness with those trees, for instance. You know... This is a knowledge the First Nations had, and, you know, scientists recently, and you probably are very well aware of it. Well, I always recommend the book, The Secret Life of Trees. I also recommend a YouTube video called The Secret Life of Trees, based on very early experiments with the plants, to find out, in fact, if they have feelings. And and actually scientists have found that this is true. This is very real. But this is something that the First Nations people lived accordingly. This is part of one of Creator's laws, to understand that everything is alive and there is a spirit within everything. And that we are so connected that we affect everything and are being affected by. That's how connected we are, through this web, this sacred web, this energetic web. So when you have these corporations who are, you know, determined to just, you know, usurp everything without consciousness, they are really affecting us. I mean, they could be taking a forest down in Brazil, but we are being affected wherever we are.
But I'm also saying, not to make anyone or you feel guilty, we're participants. Every time you drive your car, fill it up with gas, throw a plastic bag away, yes, get let go of an old computer, whatever it is, how do we not feel guilty? Or how do we, I mean, we're in the matrix. We are.
Yes.
And so what do you do? What do you say? I mean, you're trying to live holistically in touch, but so what do you do besides making yourself feel guilty?
Right. Exactly. Well, we are in the matrix. I mean, it's quite cool. I think part of what we're trying to do and working toward doing is waking people up to understand their relationship here, how we are all connected, and how we really must return to some form, some manner of responsibility as caretakers of this earth. It's our home. We just cannot continue the way we are. And yes, we are all guilty, but, you know, we certainly can't go around beating ourselves up. We have to make some changes.
So what do you do? How do you live the best you can? I mean, I'm using you as an example because that's your you know, you're teaching. Yeah. How, what do you do?
Well, one thing for me personally is working with the energies. I believe in, I would guess you could say I believe in the power of prayer or the power of conscious focusing, or you could say manifestation. Mm-hmm. And there have been studies of done of this. One that I heard about several years ago, which was quite amazing, that there were a group of people in different parts of the world in major cities who periodically at prescribed times simultaneously would sit down and start focusing on light and harmony, healing and peace. And they did this for 4 years. And they took studies throughout, you know, these particular times of what was going on in these major cities while they were performing these visualizations of balance and light and peace and healing. And they noticed that over this 4 year period of time, there was less crime, mm-hmm. there were less emergencies, there were less violence, murders, and so on and so forth. And the other amazing thing was that the stock market went up.
Okay.
I don't know, but well, maybe that's about good feelings. Mm-hmm.
But do you also try to minimize your footprint on the earth? I mean,
yes, I do.
Have
yes.
you do that?
Yeah, I do. Well, one thing, I've been a vision quite a few years ago came to me, and also the elders, specifically the Hopi elders, came out about, I guess it was about 20 years ago now, they said that we must find our community. We must find our water and our gardens and come together, because we will not be able to survive alone. We will need each other. So we must come together. And I, upon hearing that, I also started to receive information and guidance to find land. It's been a long process. We've just now, a year ago, purchased 103 acres, a group of us, and we will start a community. We're working to start a community where we can live off the grid, grow food, support each other in all the ways that, you know, that we're trying to do by ourselves, have less stress in our lives, minimal stress upon, you know, the earth's resources, you know, share a car, for instance, work toward getting off the grid, using solar or wind, growing our own food so we can have healthy foods, mm-hmm. and have more joy in our lives. You know, more peace, where you feel you have your community. You know, I'm not a big shopper. I'm not a big consumer. I'm very, you know, careful about what I buy food-wise, where I go. You know, how much I use my car, for instance. Mm-hmm. My clothes are good clothes, but they're old. I don't buy. I'm not a consumer. I don't have a lot of. I just got Skype. I mean, this is a major thing for me. I don't have a cell phone. I don't have an iPhone. I don't have one of those pads or whatever they. I don't even know what they are. <That's> but. You know, and I'm fine. I get along very well. I won't buy into the gadgets. It's not my nature, first of all. Mm-hmm. I don't have a TV. I haven't had a TV for 25 years. Well, I killed my TV.
Well, that's good. You're much more in touch than a lot of people. But I think it's interesting. I think the idea of communities is really an evolutionary process that we're going through, because what's interesting about that is that we now have the technology to decentralize, to build networks of people and communities and live harmoniously with a technology that connects us all, even though we all may be separated by time and distance and space, we have this other thing that pulls us together. And I think it's a good thing.
You know, I think that more and more people are awakening, and more people are realizing this, what I call the tribal consciousness, returning to the tribal consciousness, you know, and meaning that when you're in that place with people of like mind, and you're sharing your gifts, and you're helping each other, and you're enjoying your creative abilities. You know, when you're stressed out, when you're working 9 to 5 and probably even longer than 9 to 5 now, or 2 jobs, some people, or whatever it is, just to survive, to feed yourself, your children, to heat your house, to pay your mortgage, whatever it is, the stresses are enormous and you don't really live life. You don't really enjoy life. People are becoming sick. They're becoming ill. The stresses that we are under is just not normal. We weren't really meant to live like this. So the tribal consciousness, okay, this is what this is bringing into this whole mix here. What makes you happy? What is missing in your life? If you think that a new iPad will make you happy, I differ with you. That's not going to make you happy. It may be temporary happiness. Well, guess what? The next iPad is going to come along and there's another $300, you know, that you have to spend because it's like a madness. It becomes a hunger.
It is a madness, yes.
Yeah. So, and I'm not against technology. What I'm feeling that we must come to understand is the imbalance of our behavior. I'm not saying you can't have an iPad, of course, but why keep spending on the same type of technology just because it's, you know, this big hoo-ha and a big advertisement and you want to be first? What gives you inner peace? Do you have inner peace? Do you have joy in your life? What you buy in the store, a new car, a new house, or new sneakers, or whatever it is not going to give that to you. So this is what's missing for people.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's exactly right. But let's go to an even deeper level, because I want you to talk about your connection to the Kogi and the tribes of the Sierra Nevada and the hills, mountains of Colombia, who never encountered any of the conquering white civilizations, but they lived in the mountains and were able to maintain their First Nation ways, their indigenous status. And how were they, what was so special about how they lived in psychically in touch with the earth? Can you talk about that and your experience with the Kogi and the Malmo, so the shaman, the heads of those tribes and everything?
Sure.
They went through? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, when you live close to the earth, you become more aware. You become more conscious. Something starts to shift in you. And that I will point out again is part of our innate nature. There's a peace there that has always been for us. Our ancestors had that because they were close to the earth. They were, you know, farmers, most of them, before technology set in, before they were all, driven into the cities and so on and so forth. They were tribal, and they were close to the earth, and they had an awareness, a relationship, and a consciousness of everything. There were connectedness to the cosmic system, understanding the star systems and the changes of the seasons, and all of this was part of their lives. And the Kogi, over 500 years ago, when the Spanish started, you know, moving into different places and the destruction and violence and murders and eliminating the First Nations people of pretty much throughout the whole of the world, you know, here, first it started in Europe, but then they came here. In the Americas, in the Kogi, for instance, when they came, there were a certain group of people that fled, and they just disappeared, and they fled into the mountains in the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta in Colombia, and it was believed that all of those people, there were four pueblos, or the Arhuaco, the Kogi, the Concuaramo, and the Wiwa. And it was thought that this particular group of people of the Kogi Pueblo were just murdered. They just were, nobody knew where they went, so they figured they were just murdered. But instead, they fled into the high mountains and were hidden for 500 years. Really, if you think about it, that's pretty extraordinary. And it was only in 1998, I believe, that they exposed themselves, because their connection psychically, telepathically, the spiritual connectedness they had to the earth and all of the cosmic system was so profound. It's part of their law of origins. It's the way they functioned and lived before the Europeans came, before the invasion came. They told me that we were here, meaning on the earth, when the gods walked on the earth. So they have these myths. Well, you know, these are called myths, but they're really true. They're their law of origins. So they had this profound relationship, so much so that they started to realize something was going on quite serious with the earth. And they became alarmed. And they exposed themselves.
Well, how did they know that, though? Did they, through their meditations? Is that how they knew it?
Yes, they have an ability. Well, they have an ability to, first of all, they use various elements to divine, a divining method, meaning a communication with the spirit world. They also travel to a place that they call the Luna. And I guess we could describe it as a journeying or out of body experience, but it's a conscious state within another realm. It's like entering into a cosmic realm or a parallel realm. They have the ability to do that, as many First Nations people did, and some still do. Have this ability to commune with the elemental world and with parallel realms, and their connectedness allows them to do that.
Well, it should be all our, we should all be able to do that, except that we've forgotten how. We've didn't develop those attributes.
We all had the ability to do that because we were not inundated with technology and things that squirrel our brain. We all have, even today, people all have the ability, these psychic gifts. Some are very prolific with them even today, but everyone had been given this ability. But, you know, we're told, people are told that this is crazy or weird or impossible, you know. So people doubt it, disbelieve it, make fun of it, fear it. But with these ancient people, this is a way of life. This is the way it had always been. So it's a very natural thing to them. It's not,
right.
Not, you know, this is something very important because they are in communication with the realm, the realm of spirit.
Yeah, the Aborigines call this dream time, I suppose, and they never forgot that they were in touch with this. So, what's your practice then? What you're teaching people? Talk about your work in particular with people, if you don't mind.
Well, years ago, about 20 some years ago, I had a. I had a complete change of life. It's not something that I chose. Of course, we never choose. When spirit needs us somewhere, and spirit always needs us someplace, you know, we're here on the earth to take part in certain things. I don't think we're here on the earth to accumulate a lot of money. I don't think we're here on the earth to have a lot of big things, fine houses, big cars, and stuff like that. I don't think that's our purpose. Those are, you know, something that we could acquire. But what is our purpose? You know, we all have a purpose. And so when we are supposed to be somewhere on the sacred wheel of life, and we're not making movement, or we're too preoccupied, or too fearful, or we're ignoring guidance or signs, spirit will often hit us with a 2x4. All right? Uh-huh. I call it the 2x4. So,
so you weren't in touch with all this 25 years ago, you're saying?
Well, I let's say I was not on the pathway that I am on. You know, I grew up, I am an empath. I have these gifts, and I've used them since childhood. I grew up in a household where my grandmother levitated tables and called in the spirits. I grew up in that type of a household. You know, she talked to me about the little people, about the fairy nations, so on and so forth. But I was not teaching. I was not on this spiritual path that I am on. So during this period of time, 20 some years ago, I was being, I call it like, the spirits or guidance was really talking to me and telling me that I needed to begin to call women into circles and start teaching. Mm-hmm. And, I was living a whole other type of life and I felt I was fine and I was ignoring that. I was not really prepared, and I didn't understand really why I was being asked to do this.
Right.
And for 2 years, I was being pressured with this, you know, by this guidance. It's very strong.
Like a voice coming to you, like a, what was it?
Yes, pretty much like a voice. So when you... when you have psychic abilities, you learn what is your monkey mind, your ego, and what is guidance. It comes through in a very different way. It's a different energy. It's a different feeling. It comes in a different, you know, different manner. So I was very familiar with that. And so for 2 years, I basically denied this and ignored it. And one day I was told very strongly that I would be diagnosed with breast cancer. And that year I found a lump in my breast and went to check it out, and it was malignant. And during that period of time, I just started to change my life immediately. I started saying no to people, stopped working, and I started doing energy work. You know, visualization, working with color, breath, and healing. And I had one day a vision where I was guided to go into the mountains to search for a particular stone, which I did. I spent 2 hours in the nearby mountains, and I found this stone that is exactly what I saw in the vision. It had a surface that... it looked as though there was a face upon the surface of this stone. And when I saw it in the vision, it looked to me like a mask staring at me with a mask or a person with wide open eyes, a very sharp nose, and a wide open mouth with the tongue sticking out as though it was expelling something.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went into the mountains, I found the stone with the hollows where the eyes would be, a ridge where the nose would be, and a hollow where the mouth would be. And then I was guided to go back to my studio and paint various signs, to paint the tongue coming out as red, various other colors, and the eyes, and so on. And during that time, while I was painting this, I was really taken out of my body. And I went into another realm, and I experienced chanting, women's voices, singing, and I don't know how long that I was in this realm, but when I finished, when I came back, I realized that I had just somehow been given some form of a healing ritual, some type of ritual, and that the cancer was healed. Which it was.
Wow. So, and then you, that was your beginning of your real journey, huh? Because
yes,
and that
well,
and, yeah,
yes. What happened was, now here's the place where we always come to. In our lifetimes, we always come to a crossroads. Many crossroads will be waiting for us, where we have to choose one way or the other. Now, I don't believe that there are any mistakes. If you choose one pathway, there will be many opportunities. If you choose the other pathway, there will also be many opportunities to learn something. There's not going to be a wrong pathway.
Right, but you could learn it the easy way or the hard way, like maybe, and who knows, if you would have followed your guidance, perhaps you didn't have to go through the whole other thing. I mean, I don't know.
Well, we would never know, but what I come to conclusion is that the choices in my life have brought me to where I am in this moment in time, speaking to you.
Right.
So I have to look at everything that happened to me, all the choices that I made, that were they were significant, important in order to get me here. Now, it doesn't mean that during my journey here, it was not trial and error and trouble and, you know, difficulties, right, because there certainly is. So when I received the healing, I determined in that moment to actually do what I had been being asked to do for the 2 years. Now, that was the choice. I could have said, oh, thank you very much for the healing. Now I'm just going to go on my way. But I chose to do what I was being asked to do, even though I was really quite frightened. I didn't know what I was being asked to do. I didn't know why.
What were you being asked to do exactly?
I was being asked to call women into circles. And I said, I don't know why. And they said, this is about a prophecy. It's about the prophecy of the return of the sacred feminine. Now, this was 20-some years ago, Alan, and we are in that time now.
But at that point, you had no idea what the what your intuition was telling you, you're saying.
I had no clue, and I said, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. They said, we will guide you. The idea, the idea was the return to the sacred circles for women to heal the wounds that they have carried for generations, the assault upon the sacred feminine of the, you know, through generations, plus their own selves, so that they could lead the way during this time. This is about the return of the sacred feminine, sacred masculine, and the clan mothers, the way of the clan mothers, which is a traditional matrilineal way of all First Nations people here on Turtle Island.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you say the divine feminine, what do you mean? And what is the divine masculine? I may have my own ideas, but I'm not quite as clear maybe. What do you say it is?
Well, one thing about the divine feminine and divine masculine is the tribal consciousness that this brings us back to. Tribal consciousness, okay, it's unity. It's harmony and balance. It's respect, okay. It's understanding in the matrilineal society, for instance, with the clan mothers, that the clan mothers were, you know, brought the wisdom. Their mothers, sisters, aunties, and grandmothers, you know, all women are givers of life. And they were respected, and the clan mothers were renowned for the wisdom that they carried. They chose to go to war or not. They chose the chiefs. And they could dispel that chief if the chief wasn't really working for the whole of the people, for the good of the people. So when you have this system with the clan mothers or the matrilineal society, that means that there was a balance and harmony between the men and the women. There was great respect between them both. The men were the warriors, you could say, and the women were the ones who upheld the ways for the people. They determine whether to go to war or not. But the men were the protectors of the women and the children. And the women, you know, held the wisdom and knowledge of how, you know, when to move camp, where to go, when to go to war, when not to go to war, and so on and so forth. And the women were very important in all of their the determinations of what the people were going to be doing or not. when the Europeans came here, you know, women didn't even have the vote. Women right. couldn't even go to school. They were basically, you know, owned. So they came here into Turtle Island with matrilineal societies, and that was quickly done away with.
Right. You know?
So when I say the return of the sacred feminine, it represents the harmony and balance of men and women. We have been pitted against each other. Men carry great wounds, as do women.
Well, yeah, and the wounds are these exactly self-imposed cultural values that we've accepted, and in a way, you know, it's now been passed down generation to generation, and we haven't known any other way. So what yes. you're saying is this return of this divine masculine, feminine, feminine, masculine, will give us a right relationship. And,
that's you know. Correct. Because, you know, society has pitted us against each other and against ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
And it starts from early childhood. We know that. I mean, you just start to look around and you can just see the sexualizing of girls, and you can see, you know, you know, what happens to boys. Boys are supposed to be this way, do this, look that, act that way. And girls are supposed to be this way, look that way, and act that way. Where's your true nature? You know, where's your individuality? Where's your own spirit in all of this?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's pretty much missing. So when you grow up, you have this agenda about, you know, as a woman, you know, I grew up this way. I had an idea. I was told that where my position was, what my part was, and what a man's part was, you know. I didn't even really know myself. We don't really know ourselves because we're acting.
Well, where'd you grow up? I mean, if you don't mind telling
me. I grew up here in the Hudson Valley. I was born here on Turtle Island. I was right. born actually in this area in the Hudson Valley, yeah, upstate New York. Yeah.
Right. And kind of a normal American family, although you had these roots somewhere?
Well, I was born in 1942. I was born actually in New Paltz here. It's only 100 miles from New York City in the Hudson Valley. And I don't know about normal American family. I suppose you'd say it's the typical. I grew up Catholic, you know, and very early realized that there was something very wrong with that. you know, I won't get into that right now, but...
Yeah.
You know, I had my own connectedness to nature. I had my own instincts. I was very early involved with the elemental world, with a lot of esoteric experiences and in interacting with other dimensions and other beings and so on and so forth. So I did have that. And, you know, growing up in, I guess you'd say, the typical American way, the American dream syndrome, which is also a big lie,
right.
you know, it's gone, you know.
Well, now it's gone for sure.
Yeah, it's gone for sure. It's gone. It was, but it's no longer.
But it really wasn't ever. Although, you know, there were people like my father who grew up very poor who did achieve a certain level of success, but it didn't make him happy. That's the thing.
Well, that's exactly right. This is what I'm talking about. It's sort of like you strive for the American dream, which doesn't really give you that inner peace or
happiness. But it did give him satisfaction, at least because he was, you know, he was a Taurus, and he wanted that satisfaction of having, you know, at least comfortable material you know, substances. But getting back to the other thing that you were saying, this over sexualization of this commercialism, I think the reason people are so, let's call it, indulgent on their sexuality, because in a sense that's the only way that connects them to nature. That human nature, that nature, that animal part of us. It's misplaced. It's overemphasized because there's no other nature that we're really so connected with. You know what I mean by that?
Well, I think it's misplaced because it's sexualizing. It's not your sexuality. It's the culture's sexualizing the female. You know, there's the difference. And I think it's way out of balance, you know. I mean, and it really, yes, we are sexual beings. Naturally, we are sexual beings, but we are being sexualized. You know, we are being told how we must look and dress in order to be acceptable. And so it's a false sense of self. And people see only the outside, you know. Yeah. And they're, so we don't really know who that person is. They don't really even know themselves because they're taught that they must look, appear, or do certain things to their bodies in order to be acceptable or loved or whatever.
Right, but I'm also saying that this indulgence on even sexuality, of course sexuality is normal, but they're, at least in the cities with the everything, it's an overindulgence. And my theory is that people go there because there's no other way to connect nature except through this overindulgence of their bodies.
Does that make sense? Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think that people are so longing and so hungry for what they've lost, and that's a bit of confusion, and they're seeking something. They're desperate for something. And what I feel they're desperate for is their true nature, their spiritual selves, their that inner peace that when you know that you are, you know, a spirit is embodied within us. You know, we are spirit. We are part of Creator, Mother, Father. We are created by that as a sacred child. You know, I feel we are all sacred children. If you just look at a child, an innocent, a firstborn, you know, they don't have original sin. You know, that's really ridiculous. But we're told that we're told that we do, you know, and taught that. And then you have guilt and you have shame, you know. And I think the excess is to break through the chains. And it's excessive and it's going in the wrong direction, I feel.
Well, yeah, no, I totally agree. So in your workshops and talks, how do you work with people?
Well, you know, trying to help people understand their true nature. You know, getting them to see what really is within your own heart spirit. What is the truth within you? And also identifying the false information. It's very important that we pinpoint and identify what we have been brainwashed or trained to believe, not only about ourselves, but about others.
Like what kind of thing are you talking about? Like what do we believe?
Well, it's interesting because doing this work that I was guided to do, this healing work, for instance, I came to the conclusion that everyone that I worked with over many periods of years, different ages, different heritages, it didn't matter, all have the same core beliefs. And I thought, this is a conspiracy. How could everybody have these same core beliefs? Nobody talks about them. They're sort of like your internal world that you keep hidden.
Like what do you mean?
Well, for instance, one of the main core beliefs that people have is that they are not lovable.
Oh.
That there's something wrong with them, that they are bad and that they are being punished, and that nothing will ever work no matter what they do, that they're a failure, on and on and on, all the negatives. Right. And you're not good enough, and people don't like you, and you could be in a crowded room with people, and over in the corner, a group of people could be talking and laughing, and that internal voice inside of you would say, well, they're laughing about you, or they don't like you.
So you're saying a lot of people have these for some reason.
A great percentage of people have this list of core beliefs. So, yes. And I found that this is a generational thing. It's passed down from generation to generation. It's a societal system. You have the religious, beliefs. You have the societal beliefs on the other level. You have people telling you how to parent, for instance. Ways to parent that are really harmful. You have dysfunctional families. You have alcoholism. You have all these things that children are growing up with, and through generations, various things are passed, and these beliefs are passed through one generation after the other. And it's really pretty false, a perception of ourselves and of others and the world.
Right. So how do you, I think you told me you developed a special process of breaking down those beliefs.
What is that?
Yeah.
Well, because first of all, people have to find out what are their, I call them brainwashing programs, because they're so in, they're so embedded within our psyche, and they we function according to these programs, and not we don't really even realize it. They pretty much rule our lives. You know, when you're brainwashed, you don't know you're brainwashed. But you have this internal voice. People can say, well, I constantly hear this voice telling me that I should, that I'm not good enough, or nobody wants me. And some people have this voice that said, well, we should just kill ourselves, or let's just kill ourselves. I mean, people have these inner dialogue that they live with.
How do you free yourself?
You have to identify your program. It's like a computer, Alan. If you want to change, a program in your computer, you must find the program first that you want to eliminate. So you have to identify that program, find that program, then you have to eliminate, then you have to insert the new program. So it's basically deprogramming and reprogramming. So you must know the core beliefs that rule you first. Mm-hmm. Then you must identify the power and the truth of who you are, because that's real also.
Which is not those core beliefs.
Exactly. But the core beliefs, because they're brainwashing programs, overrule your truth. They overrule your true nature. They overrule the spirit within you, the wisdom, the wise one within you.
Right. Right. So you encourage people, well, how do you actually work with these people to get them through it? I mean, you don't have to go through a whole process now, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, the first thing. The first thing is, you know, this is not an easy process. Healing is not an easy process. You have to really meet yourself. You have to be willing. You have to be willing, but ultimately, it changes your life. I've worked with people who were diagnosed as schizophrenic. One woman was diagnosed as schizophrenic, and when she was, you know, maybe in her early 20s. And they told her they couldn't help her, but they could help her with medication. You know, they could put her on drugs, which she did not do. But she suffered all of her life with these internal voices and this low self-esteem, this fear, level of fear and anxiety. It affected her life. When she started working with me, it was quite extraordinary. She's so not schizophrenic. I mean, there is that, but that does exist. I'm not saying it doesn't. But the majority of what people are ruled by are these core programs that is false beliefs. Started when you're very young, like you're like a little sponge. You know, who do you look to when you're a child? You look to the two important people, if you have them in your life, to tell you who you are, show you what life is about, and they basically build your foundation. They give you important building blocks in your foundation. You have to find out what are the building blocks that are missing from your foundation. And we have the capacity to rebuild our foundation, and that's this process. But you have to find all the pieces. It's like a giant puzzle. You know, like those puzzles people put on their dining room tables that are there for years. You know, you find a piece. Oh, look, here's one. Put it in the corner. Wow, look at that. Then you go away and you go on, and then you come back later. You find another piece. That's the healing process, you know. So you must find all the pieces to the puzzle, and it is a process. Healing is a journey. It's like a shamanic journey. There are archetypes that I work with, there's certain aspects of ourself. There's the feminine warrior, the masculine warrior. There is the inner child who's the one that's basically stuck with all these core beliefs. It's an essence of ourself, or you could call a cellular memory, living in its own world with all these particular core beliefs. And then you have the survivor aspect. The survivor aspect sort of like comes to the rescue when you're a child, if you're in trauma.
Right.
The survivor says, okay, you must do this because this is so awful. You can't feel this. So let's just cut the feeling wires. Let's just disconnect your feeling wires. If that happened, right?
So you help reconnect the feeling wire. That's really important because so many people are traumatized and they do get numb and they forget that the actual feeling is why they're here in a human body to feel.
Yes. Well, people have that syndrome, it's dissociation. Some people are so severely traumatized that they actually have out of body, you know, they leave their body. They're so severely traumatized. Right. Yes, it's so disconnecting the, but look, when you're a child, it's important. So the survivor aspect comes in and says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to shut off these feelings because you're not going to survive with those feelings. They're too big for a little person. Right. So, but you live your life still disconnected. So you go through life and you don't really feel fully, you know. So we have to reconnect the feeling wires in order to be a whole person, so that you can identify your happy feelings, your good feelings, the feelings that aren't right, so you can identify them and you can figure out, well, why is this so, you know. And so there's a lot to this. It's really quite amazing and powerful. When people start to shift and they start seeing this whole thing, all these pieces of the puzzle and putting them together, it's really amazing.
So what do you call this process that you're doing?
It's the core methodology.
This is something you've created.
Yes, it was something, given to me, downloaded to me all these years. It's been quite profound.
Wow. So that's a major part of your work, isn't it?
It is. Yes, and plus I work with the spiritual, ceremony and building a person's spiritual connection, and they're also developing their own gifts, like their psychic gifts that we were talking about, their intuitive gifts, their ability to receive guidance and discern, true guidance from the monkey mind or some aspect that isn't, of the light,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's so good. So how can people get in touch with you?
Well, they could connect with me through my email, which is starbeing@pronetisp.
And you also have a website, your Barbara Three Crow.
I do not have a website. No, I took that down. Yeah.
Oh,
I also have a book. I have the Core Methodology book. And I have another book called The Star Children The Star Children Today and Magic and Phenomenon. That's a wonderful book.
Oh, that sounds good. Maybe we'll do a show about that sometime, okay?
Sure. Yeah.
Because there really is magic in the world, isn't there?
Well, there is magic in the world. And the thing is that people experience magic and phenomena. And they're either afraid of it or they doubt it. Or they're told that they're crazy, but the star children is a phenomenon that has been occurring through many generations. And now at this time on Earth, because of the Earth changes and the new paradigm that we've entered into, which is the fifth hoop, 1,000 years of peace, that's where we are.
Whose prediction is that?
Well, this is a First Nations prediction. First Nations prophecy, and it was also given to me that we are entering into the fifth hoop of peace is a Hopi prophecy.
Okay.
And it relates to the return of the sacred feminine. It's in relation to the rainbow prophecy, the fifth world, fifth hoop of peace, and the return of the sacred feminine. They're all in connectedness at this time of this new shift, this new paradigm. We're in an amazing time. We are in an extraordinary time, and we all agree to be here, right?
Exactly. So
we all agreed.
Yes. So what does the future look like as this, I mean, what's the possible future? What's the beautiful unfoldment that you see is possible as we start to honor these ancient ways, these sacred ways?
Well, one thing, I have I have always had a great faith. I feel very grateful for that. I believe in the power of the light. I've had extraordinary experiences with that. There are the light beings. There are, whether you want to call them angelic beings, beings of light, you know, there are those levels of high frequencies that are really functioning and working. They're constantly working. It's up to us to align ourselves with that higher frequency now. That means emotional, physical, and spiritual frequency. When you are inundated with fear and doubt and judgment and jealousy and hatred, you are functioning on a lower frequency. This is the time, the age of enlightenment is the fifth world, is about the age of enlightenment. The light is a high frequency. So bringing that high frequency of light within you is becoming enlightened, and you become the light, and you are accelerated into a higher frequency, which shifts you into this fifth hoop, this fifth world.
And that's where we're at.
That's where we're at. So we are at a crossroads. We all have a choice. We've all been given free will. We are co-creators, every one of us. We are co-creating whether we know it or not.
So, I mean, this fifth hoop is already taking place. And so will it take 20 years or 100 years for the whole planet to make this transformation, you think?
You know, I really don't know that, Alan. I feel we are in the middle of this. We're right in the beginning of this great shift. We can see this. We can see the awakening of people. We can see the breaking up and shattering of everything. We can see the chaos accelerating, and we can see people gaining enlightenment. So we see these two things simultaneously happening side by side, you know, jockeying for position. So we are all a part of this, you know, and I just want to say that, for instance, at the World Peace Celebration Day, this is a perfect time to come together to raise the frequency. You know, we'll all be there, one mind, one heart, one spirit. You know, to honor the earth, to honor each other, to celebrate, to have fun, to sing, to hear, you know, important information, wise words, you know. And this is the perfect time to raise the frequency, to come into alignment with, you know, with that, to tip the balance, you know.
That's true. Earth Day is all over the world. The ones here in New York, on the West Coast, and my friends in Oregon, in Newport, Oregon, everywhere. It's a time to just plant the seed. It's a great time to plant the seed of remembering who
right.
and what we are and where we came from. Thank you,
yes.
Barbara, for talking to me tonight.
You're welcome, Alan. Thank you so much for asking me.
Of course. I look forward to seeing you soon, this coming
yes.
week. And Barbara, Grandmother Barbara Three Crow, will be part of this 9th Annual World Peace Earth Day Celebration in New York City next Thursday, April 23rd, 2015 at 6:30 at St. John's Lutheran Church, 81 Christopher Street. For tickets, go to planetheart.org.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. I'll be in touch with you.
All right.
This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com, and I'll be hosting the event in New York. I'll be the MC there. So look forward to seeing everyone there. If you want to reach me by email, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, and I'm going to go out with this announcement. Let me see. I could go out with this.
Come join us, Alan Seinfeld and myself, Imav, as we co-host the 9th annual World Peace Earth Day celebration, Thursday, April 23rd, from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. A conscious community gathering with 7 world leaders having a panel discussion. There will be indigenous ceremonies, live performances, and community participation. That's Thursday, April 23rd from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church, 81 Christopher Street near 7th Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. with a 6:30 pre-show. For tickets and info, go to www.planetheart.org. That's www.planetheart.org. Or email info@planetheart.org. Come on down.